Morning, everybody. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. Hope you had a good weekend. We begin this morning with another installment in our monthly series, Living Questions, in which we examine the role of religion in the public sphere. We're producing this series in partnership with the Institute for Islamic, Christian, and Jewish Studies. The Institute is about to experience its first leadership transition since it was founded. Dr. Christopher Layton, who along with religious and business leaders in Baltimore started the Institute in 1987, he's stepping aside this month as the leader of the ICJS. Dr. Heather Miller Rubens, the Institute's Catholic scholar, will take over as executive director next month. Later on the program, we'll be joined by the Jewish and Muslim scholars at the ICJS. Now, I'm pleased to welcome Christopher Layton and Heather Miller Rubens to Studio A. Good morning. Good to see you both.
Great to see you, Tim.
Thanks for having us.
And Chris, I remember when ICJS started because, as it turned out, your offices were right above mine at the Baltimore Choral Arts Society on Park Avenue in the office building of Brown Memorial Church. Your reflections as you take leave of this thing that you started as a pretty small operation back there in the mid 80s and has now grown into, I think, a thing that everybody can understand as a thing that's having quite an impact on the conversation about religious tolerance.
Well, it's quite remarkable that when we began, we had the expectation of going out of business as soon as we had raised everyone's consciousness. And the challenge that we hoped everyone would take on was the recognition that our religious traditions have this nasty habit of defining themselves over and against some other, that there is a kind of toxic habit in play in which we elevate ourselves at somebody else's expense. And we know that every religious tradition is forged in the fires of conflict, and that is very much the case with Judaism, Christianity, Islam, and Hinduism, Buddhism. I'm afraid there are no religious traditions that can claim themselves to be immune to that dynamic.
Why is that? Why are religions particularly susceptible to being forged in the context of crisis and oftentimes political conflict?
Well, this is a question that keeps many of us up late at night trying to unravel. In large measure, I think it's a sort of human proclivity, isn't it, for one group to try to differentiate or claim its distinctiveness. And in order to do that, there has to be an us and a them. But what oftentimes occurs is this more deadly move that the us gets glorified and the them gets demonized. And so the dynamic can very easily turn negative and become a polarizing force of opposition.
And Heather Miller Rubens, when the Institute was started, it was the Institute for Christian and Jewish Studies. Perhaps the most dramatic change or the most dramatic direction that the Institute has chosen to take in these last couple of years is to add Islam as a very equal and major theme of the work that you're doing. What's that going to mean moving forward? You're going to be the one running the ship as that sort of gets, you know, completely codified and completely solidified in the work of the Institute. You hired Humaira Ziad couple years ago. She's a terrific person, a wonderful scholar. She'll be joining us here on the program in a few minutes. How do you see that dynamic, having an impact on the evolution of the Institute moving forward?
The inclusion of Islam was the culmination of a three-year process, which Krish and the board helmed. And so it's a wonderful opportunity for the organization to participate in the contemporary conversation. I think thinking back to the origins of the Institute, dealing with Jewish-Christian relations was incredibly important and remains incredibly important. But talking with Muslims and talking and learning about Islam is the conversation that needs to happen at the beginning of the 21st century.
Dr. Heather Miller Rubens is the incoming executive director of the Institute for Islamic, Christian, and Jewish Studies. Dr. Christopher Layton, the outgoing executive director of the ICJS. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. So, Chris, as you think back about what you've accomplished in these last 30-some years, what are the things that stand out? What are the things that you're most proud of and happy to see continue?
Well, Tom, when I first came to Baltimore 39 years ago, it was to function as the chaplain at the Gilman School, and the Baltimore Presbytery had questions about the legitimacy of my ministry. And so I had to go before a panel of ministers who then...
Because you are an ordained Presbyterian minister.
Yes.
Minister, right?
So they had to interrogate me to make sure that my ministry was legitimate. And there was one pastor who turned to me and said, well, I'm not sure if this makes a great deal of sense. My understanding is that the Christian presence at your school has been diluted by the influx of Jewish students. And I must say I was so taken aback that my response was rather curt. I said to him, if the Christian presence is so fragile it cannot withstand the presence of Jews, the Christian presence deserves to be shattered. And again, we've come such a ways in terms of recognizing that we are enriched and enhanced through the encounter with the other, that there's an enormous amount that Christians and Jews and Muslims have to learn from each other. And what I take greatest pride and satisfaction is that increasingly there are Christians, Jews, and Muslims who come to know their own traditions in a new way, come to recognize that their religious voices can invigorate the public conversation, it can enhance discourse that's essential for a democratic polity when they are able to mobilize the wisdom of their ancestors. And so the friendships that get forged and the quality of exchanges that take place are on a different level than they were when I arrived in Baltimore so many years ago, back when dinosaurs still roamed the
right,
globe.
Right. I remember those days. That's right. I was out there fighting off those dinosaurs with you. Heather, the work of the Institute in the city itself has also increased. It seems to me that the profile of the Institute here in Baltimore, particularly since last year's uprising, it really you have responded in very specific ways. Talk a little bit about what that response has entailed and what you think the capacity of religious organizations, religious traditions can be in addressing the multiple problems that were sort of laid bare in such a dramatic way after the violence last spring.
Yeah, so our organization, when the uprising happened last year, stopped and assessed where we are as an organization and what our role is in the city. And we're, as an organization, committed to the idea that interreligious learning and interreligious friendships are core to building a good civil society. And if we truly believe that, then we need to go into the city in a firm way. And we created the Imagining Justice in Baltimore initiative to do just that. And the core of the initiative is bringing together a group of 25 activists from around the city to have a conversation grounded in religious texts from Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, essentially having an interreligious learning opportunity for these activists. And it's been an amazing experience for us to work with this particular constituency and also participate in the public conversation. So we had three public lectures at the Reginald Lewis Museum over the winter and spring, bringing Jewish, Christian, and Muslim national scholars to Baltimore to reflect on how justice is understood within their traditions and then how justice could be applied to Baltimore. In the fall, we're going to have a citywide conversation where we want people from all around the city with a variety of commitments and affiliations to come together and to really take the opportunity to read and reflect and think about this sort of larger concept.
Yeah, in the conversation so far, and excuse me, I don't mean to interrupt, but in these conversations so far, what are you finding? I mean, the fact that they are ecumenical, the fact that they are, fueled by the perspectives of different religious traditions, are you finding any common themes or any interesting points that you think can be helpful healing the city and moving the city forward?
I think that a theme that's emerged is the importance of love in the three traditions, and also the importance of knowing your neighbor in the three traditions. And The one thing I want to sort of emphasize is that we're not actually making a movement towards consensus, but we're sort of displaying what a robust commitment to religious pluralism looks like in the American context, which is more a sort of cacophony of commitments in the public square. And so the aim of the series is not to reach a sort of unified Abrahamic vision of justice in Baltimore, but to say that all of our traditions have a wealth of information on this topic, and we should be drawing on them as part of the larger puzzle that is Baltimore.
Yeah, and Chris, before we take a break for news and invite your colleagues Ben Sachs and Homaira Ziad in here, this notion of consensus is not central to what you're doing. You're not trying to get everybody to agree and you know, figure out every problem. You're just trying to make sure that folks understand the perspective of other people.
Absolutely. In large measure, we are trying to retrieve a practice, a discipline articulated in the Jewish tradition as machloket, which just means a sacred argument, an argument which doesn't yield just winners and losers, but an argument in which one discovers that one's best teachers oftentimes prove to be those with whom one most passionately disagrees.
Yeah, and in a public discourse that is so often, you know, black, white, left, right, up, down, north, south, you know, you're allowing for nuance, you know. That's a lousy idea, allowing for nuance. You should have bagged that years ago. Mm-hmm. All right, well, we'll come back with lots more after a break. Dr. Christopher Layton is the outgoing executive director of the Institute for Islamic, Christian, and Jewish Studies. Dr. Heather Miller-Rubens, the incoming executive director of the ICJS. You're listening to our monthly series, Living Questions, in which we explore the role of religion in the public sphere. And after a break for news, we'll have more with Chris Layton and Heather Rubens, and we'll be joined by the Jewish and Islamic scholars at the ICJS, Benjamin Sachs and Homaira Ziad. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Here's Nathan.
Thanks, Tom. You're listening to the Maryland Morning Podcast, a service of your public radio, WYPR, in Baltimore. Find more podcasts at WYPR.org and tell us what you think by email, mdmorning@WYPR.org. Now, back to the podcast.
Good morning and welcome back as the investigation into the mass shooting at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando, Florida continues. Perhaps the only thing that's clear at this point is that the shooter was motivated by a toxic admixture of anger and bigotry, which may or may not have been exacerbated by self-loathing and an alleged allegiance to a wide range of often opposed terrorist organizations. Once again, as the sun rose over southern Florida 2 weeks ago, we were confronted with the possibility that these murders were carried out in the name of religion. If you're just joining us, we're talking this morning with the leadership team of the Institute for Islamic, Christian, and Jewish Studies. Dr. Christopher Layton will retire as the Institute's executive director next week. Dr. Heather Miller-Rubens will succeed him in that role. Dr. Homaira Ziad is the Islamic scholar at the ICJS. Dr. Benjamin Sachs is the Jewish scholar. They're all here with me in Studio A for this month's edition of Living Questions, our look at religion and the public square. So Ben and Homaira, good morning and welcome to you guys. It's interesting to me, Ben, that when the Institute started, one of the issues was Christian anti-Semitism towards Jews. And it was something that the Institute has, you know, played a big role in developing a conversation about. And I'm proud to have been part of that conversation back in the 90s when the Baltimore Choral Arts Society did a performance of the St. Matthew Passion. We talked about religious intolerance in the Gospels and in the music of Bach and in Western art in general. So it's something that's certainly near and dear to my heart. But I wonder, now that we've added Islam to the mix of the Institute's work, do you find parallels between anti-Semitism and Islamophobia, which is now so much in people's consciousness?
I do see parallels, but we need to be clear that the history of anti-Semitism and the history of Islamophobia are very different, and the political contexts are very different, so that when we draw any type of analogy between the two, there are always going to be exceptions. That being said, I do see similarities, especially in the public square, where you have a lot more scholars writing about Islam who are not Muslim, and you also have a public excoriation of Muslims done by think tanks and politicians and journalists. And it's making its way into a public square in a way that's very similar to the way that anti-Semitism rose in Europe in the 19th century, that Sharia law, for instance, is apparently not compatible with Western values. We saw the same thing with Jewish law in the 19th century, that Jewish values were not in any way relatable to German values, et cetera. And so the one thing that we can learn moving forward at the Institute is that these moves have consequences. And when you feel compelled to paint an entire community with a single brush publicly and negatively, the consequences are usually violent. And it may not be violent now, but it will ultimately be violent when the language is based in violence.
And Homer Ziad, the Brexit vote, for example, in England, it's Washington Post reporting yesterday that after that referendum, a wave of racist incidents have taken place in Britain. British police recording a huge uptick in learning from social media and from people reporting and from police investigations around the country. It seems like there is an intensified reaction, an intensified, as Ben said, reaction that has led to violence already over this issue of immigration, over this issue of other, and in large part, it's centered in the Muslim community. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts about that?
Well, yes, absolutely. I mean, we know that those who are rallying for the British exit were, in fact, fanning the flames of racism, fanning the flames of Islamophobia, and certainly focusing on an influx of immigrants that were coming from Muslim lands or Muslim-majority nations. And we see that happening here as well. So, for example, the politicians, Donald Trump just being the most egregious example, have been fanning the flames of Islamophobia by focusing on the hordes that are coming in from Muslim-majority nations to bring in a different set of values. And that really centers on this issue that these people are essentially different from us, that their value systems are incompatible with ours. And this it brings up all the tropes of traditional Islamophobia, which are that Islam and those who are call themselves Muslims are somehow essentially violent, essentially deceitful, essentially misogynist, essentially different from us, and that Islam is uniquely a religion of violence, uniquely a religion of misogyny, and that unlike other human beings, the dehumanizing aspect of Islamophobia is that unlike other human beings, Muslims are driven primarily by theological, religious, scriptural traditions, that they're not influenced in any way by what influences a normal human being, politics, economics, social status. All of these things are not present when Muslims act. So yes, we see these tropes playing out, especially in this conversation around immigration and the threat of immigration to the United States, which again is overblown considering how many refugees we've actually brought into the country, which is abysmally low compared to the rest of the world, which is taking in so many.
Dr. Homer Ziad is the Islamic scholar at the Institute for Islamic, Christian, and Jewish Studies. Dr. Benjamin Sachs is the Jewish scholar. Heather Miller Rubens, the Catholic scholar, she's about to become the executive director. And Dr. Chris Layton is the outgoing executive director of the Institute for Islamic, Christian, Jewish Studies. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to Living Questions, our series on religion. So, Chris Layton, here's the rub. You're talking about tolerance. You're talking about understanding the other. You're talking about not building a consensus, but certainly building an appreciation for people with a different perspective. How does one incorporate this notion of tolerance when it comes to intolerant people? For example, if you're one of those many people who disagree strongly with Mr. Trump about his notion that, building the wall and keeping Muslims out, and, Mr. Cruz actually suggesting that we start, with law enforcement monitoring Muslim communities in the United States. If you don't agree with that, if you think that that's morally repugnant, if you think that that's bad public policy, if you think that that's bad for the security of the United States, how does one then become, is one obliged to be tolerant in any way of that point of view?
Well, there's a saying that goes, in the face of stupidity, even the gods are helpless. And we buck against this whole question of breaking people out of their insularity, which is an insularity that enshrines stupidity and makes ignorance of a global force. In large measure, the ICJS is committed to being a venue where people come to know each other and don't simply become tolerant of each other, but again become so deeply entangled and enmeshed in traditions other than their own that they start to see the world in new and expanded terms. So the shifting of a culture, the shifting of a public conversation that moves people to a greater appreciation and understanding allows for the excitement of an adventure. One goes to different lands, one makes discovery of different people, and as a consequence of that, remaining within the isolated enclave feels suffocating. So our experience has been that people who are willing to travel into unfamiliar terrain quickly discover that the world is much bigger and more exciting, and the possibilities are far richer than they had ever imagined.
Yeah, and Heather Rubens, I mean, the conversations that you've been sponsoring, that you've been putting together, the people you've been convening, the topics you've been taking up over these last almost 30 years now, it really, in a certain sense, it's just as simple as that. I mean, I think about marriage equality, and when gay marriage became much more acceptable, it seemed to be the tipping point was that more gay people came out, which meant more straight people understood that they knew gay people. And they realized, oh, this is a person I've always liked, and now I've just found out that he or she is gay. Therefore, I don't have any trouble with same-sex marriage. Is it just that simple? If we just simply put the right folks in the room talking about the right things in a calm and civil way, we'll make progress one step at a time.
I believe so. I think that the unique genius of the ICJS is the recipe of knowledge plus relationships builds a sort of resilient community. And I think bringing people together, so combating Islamophobia, going back to our earlier conversation, having a conversation about what it means to be Sunni and Shia in isolation, and you're reading it on the internet or you're looking up something, that necessarily isn't going to diminish your fear of Islam or your Muslim neighbors. Bringing people together to have that conversation with Muslims in the room will do that work. And that's what we're committed to doing as an organization, education plus relationship building.
And Ben Sachs, as you have these conversations here in Baltimore, I mean, you can give folks the facts. For example, Mother Jones reports that there have been 49 mass shootings in the United States since September 11th, half of which have been carried out by white men, right? You can tell people those facts, that kind of thing, to say that this notion that, Islamic extremism or whatever it is, that whatever tag they want to put on it, is perhaps even in a sinister way, overblown. But do the facts, have you found in these conversations that the facts are convincing people? What does it take to actually turn the heart and mind of a person who might be thinking that?
I'm not sure that I have the answer as to what turns the heart and mind of any one individual. When we do present facts to people, it does cause a pause. What usually happens is someone will disagree with the facts. That can't be true. But I think over time, when people are willing to address the fact that they're coming from a place of prejudice and not from a place of information, they're more amenable to it. But going back to Chris's point, sometimes the allure of any type of ideology or theology is so strong that even facts might not prevent people from continuing to think in a certain way. We invite those people to the Institute, but usually people who come and talk to us are interested in facts and information and less so about ideology and fear.
Yeah. And Homer, I'm going to give you the last word. We're running out of time, but Leon Wieseltier wrote in the Post, I think yesterday, about the compassion deficit that we have in this country, and that we tend to be compassionate towards one group at the expense of another. He talks about the political discussion, saying now everybody's warmed up to the middle class, let's forget about the poor. Is there there a compassion deficit, and are there things that all organized religions can do to even that playing field?
Is there a compassion deficit toward a particular religious tradition, or in
just
in general?
In general. I mean, is it always at the expense of another?
I certainly think that all our religious traditions have focused on compassion as a serious force for the cultivation of character and for creating links between religious traditions. I do feel that, again, this is very contextualized, but I do feel that, yes, we haven't spent as much attention in our public discourse around religion, in our religious spaces, focusing on what it really means to ethically be a Muslim, be a Christian, be a Jew, right, and what it means to what kinds of exercises we can engage in.
And I'm sorry, we're going to have to stop it there because we're out of time. But I do appreciate all of you coming in, and good luck, Chris, in your next chapter. And thanks for the continuing work that you guys do. Omer Ziad, Benjamin Sachs, Heather Miller-Rubens, and outgoing ICJS Executive Director Christopher Layton have been my guests for this edition of Living Questions, our monthly series on religion in the public sphere. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Coming up a little later, a preview of the African American Festival. But first, it's time for our weekly look at the theater scene.